Greetings, love, through the name of Christ this morning. This morning for a message, we'll be looking at probably one of the favorite children's stories of the Bible. Are you boys, what's your favorite Bible story? Anyone? Probably Daniel in the Lion's Den is one of the ones that comes to mind, right? And we'll be looking at Daniel chapter 6, thinking of this person that was put into a den of lions. And when you think of lions, the animals, we're not very familiar with them. We have mountain lions, which I guess is fairly close around here. But the lions in this situation, African lions, are also dangerous animals, and through history there have been instances where lions have caused quite a bit of destruction. Back in 1898, two male lions stalked a railroad construction crew in Uganda and were believed to have killed about 135 victims. And then in 1932, a pride of lions went on a killing spree that left 1,500 men, women, and children dead. So these are dangerous animals, and we know that lions normally don't attack people, don't kill people, but if there isn't much other prey around for them, they will attack people. And once they find out how easy prey people are, they can develop that habit of attacking people. But we know that in this story here, these lions were kept in a cage here. Anyway, we'll read this story at this time, Daniel chapter 6. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom, and over these three presidents of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give account unto them, and the king should have no damage. Sorry, I'll read that verse again. And over these three, there should be a comma after these, apparently. Over these 120 princes, there were also three presidents set, and Daniel was one of these three presidents. He was the foremost one. He was responsible to the king over all these, over the whole realm, kind of, I guess. Anyway, then verse 4, then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then said these men, We shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said unto him, King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes, the counselors and the captains have counseled together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing, that it be not changed according to the law of Medes and the Persians, which altereth not. Wherefore, King Darius signed the writing and the decree. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying, making supplication before his God. Then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. Hast thou not signed a decree that every man that shall ask a petition of any god or man within 30 days, save of thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, "The thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which altereth not." Then answered they and said before the king, "That Daniel, which is of the children of the captivity of Judah, regardeth not thee, O king, nor the decree that thou hast signed, but maketh his petition three times a day." Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself, and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men assembled unto the king and said unto the king, "Now, O king, that the law of the Medes and the Persians is, that no decree nor statute which the king establisheth may be changed." Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, "Thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee." And a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den. And the king sealed it with his own signet, and with the signet of his lords, that the purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting. Neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste unto the den of lions. We'll just stop here for a second. This isn't really part of what I was going to talk about, but notice this king's faith in Daniel's God at this point. If everything, what we know about what happened here probably in these dens of lions before, what we would assume would be the natural progression of things, there would have been no reason for the king to get up early, would there? He could have slept in and had someone maybe bring him a few leftover bones in the afternoon or whatever, but why, if he didn't have a faith in Daniel's God, why did he rise early and go and call to Daniel? He knew, he had a pretty good idea that there was going to be an answer for some reason. Continue reading. "When he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions? Then said Daniel unto the king, O king, live forever. My God hath sent his angel and hath shut the lions' mouths, that they have not hurt me, forasmuch as before him innocency was found in me. And also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt." Then was the king exceeding glad for him, and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him, because he believed in his God. And the king commanded, and they brought those men which had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives. And the lions had the mastery of them, and break all their bones in pieces, or ever they came at the bottom of the den. In other words, they didn't even touch the ground before they were destroyed. Then King Darius wrote unto all the people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, "Peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is a living God, and steadfast forever in his kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in earth, who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions." So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Don't normally read that long of a passage, but it's important to see that whole story again. This is like I said in the beginning, a famous children's story. It has everything children's stories usually have, as danger, adventure, suspense, and an exciting end. I think that's probably why it's such a popular story. We see this story. Why is it in the Bible? I think it's a story about weakness. I think in Hebrews 11:33 to 34, It talks about those who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the enemies of the armies of the aliens. And in 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9, we read, "My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me." In this story, we sometimes think it's a story of strength, and it is, but it's also a story of weakness. And we need to see that weakness in ourselves, of ourselves as human beings. We are weak, and we are no match for the lions around us. We don't come before God because we deserve to be here, but we come because we need to be here. Without Jesus, we are weak. And we all individually need Jesus, or we won't accomplish anything of lasting value. No matter how important we may consider ourselves, no matter how rich or how well connected or how famous, we have nothing without Jesus. We have no value. We need him. Now, this story, when you think of Daniel, I didn't study that all out for myself, but according to some of the helps I had, he wasn't as young as I sometimes picture him to be. Some picture him to be in his prime, maybe there, 30, 40-year-old person, but apparently he was probably in his late 70s or 80s. He was well-respected and honored of the king here, but he was no spring chicken anymore. He had a lifetime behind him already, or quite a long time that he'd been serving faithfully. And his enemies probably considered him a fairly easy target for what they wanted. They were jealous of him, and they wanted to remove him from his position of power. And most likely they thought they could do this quite well. I guess the reason this subject came to me, or why I was thinking about this story in Canada, there we are getting really close to an election. And I'm not sure, I knew a while ago when your next election is too. It's not too far in the distance, is it? Anyway, we look at the people that are in power in our lands and the similarity to these people, or to the situation here. In our time, we also see people want a position of authority, and the easiest way they seem to have to do that is to tear other people down, to knock other people down. And that way, hopefully, they'll look better themselves. That's what these princes, governors, were trying to do to Daniel. They were jealous of the respect that he had in the king's court. And I think they probably thought that any man that had been in government this long must be corrupt. They probably thought that there was probably many things that they could use to remove him easily. And that's the same that we see in government today. Anybody that has been there for a while, sooner or later they can find something that they smear in the media. But as they looked into Daniel's life, there was no immorality in his life that they could bring up. There was no embezzlement, no betrayal. There was no self-serving schemes that he had going. But Daniel was an honest and blameless man. We see that in verse 4. They sought to find occasion against Daniel according to the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was any error or fault found in him. So they realized that there was nothing in this life, in his work in the kingdom here, that they could use. So they started to scheme for other ways that they could bring him down. He refused to be corrupted, so then this idea came to them. They needed to attack his faith in his God. In Daniel 6, verse 5, then said these men, "We shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God." This was his Achilles heel, we could say. He was unswervingly faithful in his religious life. And that was his, what they would call his weakness. One thing that they could rely on, one thing that they could attack. And that's how we know that the world views us too, worldly people. They look at our commitment to Christ and they mock us. And when they look at us without knowing Christ, they can also see things that seem weak to them, seem to them that don't make sense. And hopefully, as we go through this lesson, we'll see that that is our challenge today, is that we would have lives that, if people want to attack us, they'll need to use our religion in society. That's the only thing that they can use to where they can see that we are need to be consistent in all areas of our life. But hopefully that they won't be able to find any of the faults that they see in people around in the world in position of power, but hopefully they will see that. And they do see us as standing firm. And that's why I think persecution for us will become greater in these next few years. Because of your faith, many in the world will always look on you as weak and ignorant and vulnerable. They'll laugh at you, they'll ridicule you, make fun of you. They'll talk about you behind your back. They'll do all these things because they see your faith as your liability or your weakness. People may be trying to attack us, trying to take advantage of us, because they know that we won't retaliate, hopefully. We see this in Daniel's life. His faith was his strength. His faith was why he was able to be so strong. And that's why he survived the hatred of his enemies. That's why in Hebrews 11, verse 33 and 34, we read before, tells us about those who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. It's also why in 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9, God told Paul, "My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness." And that's why we, like Daniel, can say that our strength comes through our faith in God. It's out of our weakness that through him we can be made strong. It's in our weakness that God's strength can become perfect. We all have that tendency to want to be strong in ourselves. And like I mentioned, people that enter politics want to see themselves as being strong. They hope that there's no faults that people can bring up, and hopefully nobody will find out things about them. And hopefully their strengths will be greater than their opponents, but we all have a bit of that tendency that we want to be strong in ourselves. But if that's all the strength that we have in ourselves, we know that we will soon be brought low as well. First thing that we see then in this story is our weakness and God's strength. And the second thing we see is the power of courage. As one quote said, courage does not consist in feeling no fear, but in conquering fear. He is the hero who, seeing the lions on either side, goes straight on, because that is where his duty lies. Now, these lions that these kings kept, these Mideast or Near Eastern kings, loved to depict themselves conquering lions, being in battle with lions. There's images that are found still today of carvings of kings fighting lions. But these lions were typically corralled and caged and not encouraged or not encountered in the wild, but were kept in pens. And these kings kept them for sport, to just show their manhood, their courage. But this 70 or 80 year old man was not what we would call a mighty warrior here at this time, I don't think. I think he'd probably spent his last number of years in, we could say, office work. He'd been involved in ruling the kingdom, that responsibility, but could call him kind of a defenseless old man facing certain death. But in spite of that, Daniel is seen here as a man of courage and faith. He didn't make a big scene when he was when this decree was passed, was told what the sentence would be. And in the morning, he called forth to Darius, said, "My God hath sent his angel and hath shut the lions' mouths, that they have not hurt me, forasmuch as before him innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt." He had been kept very safely through the night. We know that King Darius didn't sleep that night, but I think Daniel had a peaceful night. I think before he was even thrust into the den of lions, maybe he didn't know he would be delivered, but he wasn't afraid. I think he had that kind of a faith and trust in God. Know that there was an angel there with him all night, and angels are powerful beings. And I'm sure Daniel felt that presence of that angel there with him, probably saw him there. Know that one place in the scripture, an angel took out 185,000 enemy soldiers in a single night. So if angel is able to do that, I think these few lions here were no match for this angel. So Daniel had rest this night. Also, Psalm 127, verse 2, says, "It is in vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep." I think that's a promise for us as well, that if we trust in him and we see ourselves as weak, it's only through Christ that we have strength, then we also can rest at night and not need to worry, because we know who holds tomorrow. God told his people in Deuteronomy 31, verse 6, "Be strong and of a good courage. Fear not, nor be afraid. For the Lord thy God, he it is that doth go with thee. You will not fail thee nor forsake thee. This same God who has promised, that he will not leave us nor forsake us, was the same God that Daniel trusted in here. Now in verse 10, Daniel 6, says, now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his window being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. We'd say, well, did he know what the commandment was, that he was not to pray? Well, of course he knew. But in spite of this law, Daniel deliberately went right to his room, and he deliberately left the window open and prayed the same as he did before. Got down on his knees and prayed. We would say, well, maybe he prayed because he realized this was the time he needed to pray more than ever. I think that's how it is for us too. When we face the opposition of the world around us, when they seem to make laws that are going to make it almost impossible to have our schools, or we don't know how we can raise our children, that is the time for us to be even more faithful so that he can work mightily through us and for us on our behalf. And same way that he did a miracle here in Daniel's life, he can do that in our lives too when we come to him and pray to him. Matthew 10, verse 28 says, and fear not them which kill the body, but are able to kill the soul. Sorry, I keep misreading this here. Fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not 2 sparrows sold for a farthing, and one of them shall not fall to the ground without your Father? But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear ye not, therefore, ye are of more value than many sparrows. And I think that's probably why we become so fearful at times, because we are afraid of someone that can take our life from us. And we'd all naturally shy away from that, but we are called to not fear those that can do that, but only fear those that can destroy our faith, can keep us from our eternal reward. Never be afraid to stand up for God, because when you do, God notices. God is watching to see if you have enough faith to put him first in a world that is often hostile to our faith. When we stand firm for him, God just might change our world around us as well. We know that God did this in Daniel's life here. When Daniel was willing to stand up for him, God didn't just stop the mouths of the lions and take vengeance on Daniel's enemies. He did that. But he also changed Daniel's world. It says in verse 25, I'll read 25 to 27 again. Then King Darius wrote unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and steadfast forever, and his kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed, in his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in the earth, who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. We'll stop reading there. I don't want to say that if we are faithful to God and rely on his strength, that God will change the laws of the nations necessarily, but he might. You know, It's impossible for us to say what he will do, but he will make himself strong in our lives if we do that. This one story can change our lives if we are convinced to stand for God as Daniel did. We need to have courage to stand for God. And there's a fine line between what we need to do. We don't want to become political and try to influence decisions that governments make necessarily in the land. But I think we can never underestimate the strength that we have as a faithful people when we commit ourselves to him, to Christ, and to see our weakness as the only way that we can gain strength with him. And we are willing to give up our own ideas and our own agendas to let God rule in our lives. And to continue to be faithful even when we know that the enemy is looking and quite likely will try to use whatever we're doing to defeat us. As we do that, our God is as great now as he ever was and can work on our behalf as well. Trust this can be an encouragement to us as we look at the shaky things around us politically, maybe. It can be scary as we realize that the powers that be are not friends of God. But let's be courageous and think and realize that as we are faithful to him, he can do great things. And maybe it'll take a long time before we see any results, and maybe we possible that we might not even see results in this life. But there's a witness going forth when we are faithful, like Daniel was. And we still today read about that story, and we marvel at the power of the angel there keeping the lion's mouth shut. But there's so many areas and aspects in our life where God is showing himself just as powerful, and let's praise him for that. Let's kneel for prayer.